Hello, this is your volunteer broadcaster, Neil Kelly, bringing you today's Yuma Sun Daily with a look at life in and around Yuma. As usual, we start with local news, and the first article is titled, City Voices Opposition to Colorado River Water Transfers, by Joyce Lobeck for the Yuma Sun. The Yuma City Council has directed staff to write a letter to federal officials that clearly affirms the importance of the city's Colorado River water rights while also expressing the need to protect the river system. Those are highlights of a resolution council unanimously approved Wednesday to be included in the planned letter. The letter will be the city's response to the draft environmental impact statement the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation recently released. It is part of the continuing effort to negotiate a new management plan for the Colorado River system to replace the existing guidelines that expire at the end of this year. Comments on the statement are due March 2nd. Jeremy McCall, City Utilities Director, said that once the council signs off on the letter, it will be submitted by the deadline to become part of the comment process. The resolution includes the city's opposition to any water transfers from the river during drought and times of water shortages that would further stress the system. Transfers shall not occur until Lake Mead and Lake Powell reach normal operating levels to ensure safe and reliable water supplies and hydroelectric power generation, the resolution states. Furthermore, the resolution calls for recognition of the city's long-standing practice of returning treated wastewater to the Colorado River, providing a measurable benefit to the river system. And there should be explicit notations in the final environmental impact statement that continuation of return flow credits will be applied toward the city's consumptive use. The council also requested that the city's conservation programs be recognized, and those of similarly situated communities, resulting in their diverting less than their full Colorado River entitlement and leaving a portion of their allotment in the river system for the benefit of river health. Reclamation has stated that it expects the seven basin states that rely on water from the Colorado River to negotiate a solution, but to date, they have not reached consensus on a new plan. The states include the upper basin states of Colorado, Utah, Wyoming, and New Mexico, and lower basin states of Arizona, California, and Nevada. The river also provides water to Mexico and regional tribal nations. However, officials have long recognized that the river was originally overallocated. Furthermore, it has shrunk due to a long-time drought and climate change, even as demand for its water has increased. As a result, water shortages have been declared in recent years, with Arizona, in particular agriculture in the center of the state, taking the largest percent of reduced allocations. Our next local news article is titled, Spirit of Humanity, Anna Marie McCafferty, by Matilda Carpenter, Sun Staff Writer. Anna Marie McCafferty, who just turned 99 years old this month, has spent more than 15 years crafting rosaries that are sent all around the world. McCafferty recently talked to the Yuma Sun about the art of rosary making, life after nearly a century, and what it means to her to have dedicated so much to total strangers. McCafferty explained how she was introduced to rosary making. There used to be a group of ladies that there were making rosaries, so I asked them what they were doing, she recalled. I said if anyone could show me how, I'd like to start. One lady taught me, and I started working. At the beginning, when I was younger, of course, I used to make 70 a week. McCafferty's rosaries are distributed not just here in Yuma via the Catholic Church, but all over the world. It makes me feel good to think that somebody in Italy or wherever is going to receive something that is going to help her, said McCafferty. Though her pace has slowed down over the years, she still manages to put together a stunning number of rosaries. McCafferty herself has no idea how many she's made over her lifetime. But even at a conservative 50 per week, the amount would number in the tens of thousands. During the interview, during which she maintained her progress on the current set she was working on, McCafferty showed a large bag filled with rosary beads. McCafferty has made the process a part of her daily routine. I get up in the morning, and before I do anything, I start working on my rosaries, she said. Then I will have my medicine, my breakfast, and I come back in here. A rosary is a set of prayer beads, and the construction requires specific knotting and numbers of beads, which symbolize aspects of the Catholic faith. There are two colors of beads, with the majority being one color that reflects Hail Mary prayers, and the second color representing Our Father prayers, joined together with a crucifix. McCafferty said that she occasionally gets cards from the recipients of her rosaries, including some from Turkey and Italy. "It made me feel good," McCafferty said. Somebody in Italy received a rosary from little me. We also asked McCafferty about her views on the world as a 99-year-old woman. "I think we've gained a lot in technology, but I think we lost a whole bunch in humanity," she said. "Now, any kind of an answer you get, the phone. This is totally new world for me." In a time when so many people are quick to talk the talk, McCafferty is an example of walking the walk with her steadfast devotion to both her faith and to the strangers who are touched by her work and will never meet her. The next article is titled, "Somerton Man Dies After Car Enters Canal," by James Gilbert, Sun Staff writer. A Somerton man died Tuesday afternoon after his car left the road and went into a canal in eastern Yuma County. The Yuma County Sheriff's Office said the crash was reported about 3:49 p.m. near East County 8th Street and South Avenue 44E. Investigators said a 2006 Mercury Grand Marquis was traveling west on County 8th Street when the driver failed to make a curve, veered off the roadway, went down an embankment, and ended up in a canal. Both the driver and a passenger managed to get out of the vehicle, but the driver was swept away by the current and drowned. Personnel from the Tri-Valley Fire District responded and attempted life-saving measures, but the driver was pronounced dead at the scene. The driver was identified as Misal Orozco Leon, 32, of Somerton. The sheriff's office said his family has been notified. The crash remains under investigation. The sheriff's office suspects that speed and impairment played a role. Anyone with information is asked to contact the Yuma County Sheriff's Office at 928-783-4427 or 78-CRIME to remain anonymous. Our next local news article is titled "Imperial County Sheriff's Office Arrests" by Imperial Valley Press. Winter Haven. Man charged with contempt of court. Imperial County Sheriff's Office deputies arrested Paul N. Humphreys, 54, in the Andrade-Winter Haven area. Humphreys was booked at 2:44 p.m. December 26th on a charge of contempt of court for disobeying a court order. His bail was set at $2,500. Woman facing drug charges, bench warrant. A 36-year-old woman was arrested in the Picacho area of Winter Haven on suspicion of drug-related offenses, according to sheriff's records. Aaron Jean Phillips was booked at 7:18 p.m. December 27th by deputies on charges of possession of a controlled substance and possession of unlawful paraphernalia. She also had an outstanding bench warrant for failure to appear. Her total bail was set at $15,000. Fugitive apprehended on out-of-state warrants. Kayla Raylan Gularte, 28, was arrested by deputies in the Los Algodones, Winter Haven area on two out-of-state fugitive warrants. She was booked at 10:15 p.m. December 27th and is being held without bail pending extradition proceedings. Man held on out-of-state warrant. A man was arrested on an out-of-state warrant, the sheriff's office reported. Joaquin Antonio Camacho, 35, was booked at 9:02 p.m. January 1st in the Algodones area. He is being held without bail pending extradition proceedings. Suspect faces multiple charges after police chase. A police pursuit ended with the arrest of a 47-year-old man on multiple charges, including suspicion of evading a peace officer, authorities said. William Henry Madrigal was arrested near Flood Road, and booked at 1:27 a.m. January 4th, according to sheriff's records. The charges included evading a peace officer, petty theft, and driving with a suspended or revoked license. His bail was set at $10,000. Man arrested for violating domestic violence order. A 38-year-old man was arrested on suspicion of violating a court order, according to sheriff's records. Jose Carlos Nunez was taken into custody by deputies on Andrade Road and booked into jail at 5:35 p.m. January 4th on a charge related to domestic violence. Bail was set at $5,000. Woman arrested on battery charge. A 34-year-old woman was taken into custody near the intersection of Coah and Winter Haven, according to the sheriff's office. Ludine Allen was booked at 2:04 a.m. January 5th on a charge of battery of a spouse, ex-spouse, or cohabitant. Her bail was set at $5,000. Domestic violence, vandalism allegations lead to arrest. A 35-year-old man was arrested on multiple charges, including suspicion of corporal injury to a spouse, the sheriff's office reported. Lucas Jorge Lopez was booked at 3 p.m. January 21st following an incident on Turquoise Circle. The charges include inflicting corporal injury on a spouse or cohabitant, damaging a wireless communication device, and vandalism. He's being held on a $150,000 bail. Marshals apprehend man on out-of-state warrant. The U.S. Marshals Service apprehended a 65-year-old man in Winter Haven on an outstanding warrant from another state. Raymond James Valenzuela was taken into custody on Indian Rock Road and processed by federal authorities based in El Centro. According to sheriff's records, Valenzuela is being held without bail pending further legal proceedings related to the out-of-state warrant. He was booked at 12:48 p.m. on January 27th. Construction worker apprehended on out-of-state warrant. A 60-year-old man was arrested on an outstanding warrant from another state, authorities said. Mitchell Franklin Swinford was taken into custody by California Highway Patrol officers near the intersection of Interstate 8 and West Winter Haven Drive. He was booked into the Imperial County Jail at 5:34 p.m. January 27th on a fugitive warrant. According to public booking logs, his bail was set at $2,500. Man facing vandalism charge. A 44-year-old man was arrested on suspicion of felony vandalism, according to sheriff's reports. James Pum Lai Jakovich was arrested by deputies in the area of Agnes Road. He was booked at 4:32 p.m. January 28th on a charge of vandalism, causing $400 or more in damage. He's being held on $10,000 bail. Andrade, suspect arrested on DUI charge at port. Authorities arrested a 40-year-old man on suspicion of driving under the influence of drugs at the Andrade Port of Entry, according to the California Highway Patrol. Marty Ray Davis was detained by CHP officers and booked at 1:52 a.m. January 27th into the Imperial County Jail on a felony DUI charge. He's being held on a $2,500 bail. The next article is titled Exceptional Community Hospital to Host Heart Health Fair by Matilda Carpenter, SunStaff writer. February is Heart Awareness Month. An exceptional community hospital is using the occasion to help educate Yuma residents about the importance of heart health. As part of its outreach, the hospital will host a free heart fair on Saturday, February 21st from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at 2648 South Arabi Road. Featuring several community partners, the event will include a coloring contest, heart-healthy cooking demonstrations, dance and exercise performances, and blood pressure screenings. Lisa Brazil of Exceptional Community Hospital said learning about heart health is important for people of all ages. Heart disease is the leading cause of death for both men and women in the U.S. A healthy heart lowers the risk of heart attacks, strokes, high blood pressure, and heart failure, Brazil said. The good news is, heart problems are preventable. Small daily choices, like staying active, eating heart-healthy foods, managing stress, and knowing your numbers, can make a big difference. Hospital officials said the event is part of a broader effort to promote healthier lifestyles in the community. Because heart disease can be prevented, we are excited to celebrate Heart Awareness Month and encourage our community to take steps toward a healthy heart, Brazil said. We move on to state news, and the first article there is titled, Genealogy Sites Have Helped Solve Major Crimes. Police in Nancy Guthrie's case might turn to them, by Ed White, Associated Press. Authorities trying to solve the disappearance of Nancy Guthrie say they might tap DNA genealogy databases, the same step that police took to unravel a decades-old series of murders in California and the fatal stabbings of four college students in Idaho. The strategy could be fruitful. If unidentified DNA evidence can be connected to someone, even a distant relative, in a common genealogy database, it would give investigators more information and possibly lead to a suspect in Guthrie's kidnapping in Arizona. "It's a fantastic tool," said Ruth Ballard, a geneticist in California who specializes in DNA and has testified in hundreds of court cases. "If it's a good quality sample and they're able to get a profile, they could find a hit on that fairly quickly." The Sheriff's Department in Pima County, Arizona, said DNA collected so far in the investigation has not turned up any matches in a national criminal justice database known as CODIS, which has DNA profiles from convicted criminals and, in some states, people arrested for certain crimes. Investigators are currently looking into additional investigative genealogy options for DNA evidence to check for matches. CODIS is one option of many databases that are available, the Sheriff's Department said Tuesday. The department said Wednesday that biological evidence from Guthrie's Tucson area home was being examined and that DNA profiles were at a lab for analysis. Guthrie, the mother of NBC Today co-anchor Savannah Guthrie, has been missing from her home since February 1st. The FBI said gloves found about 2 miles away appeared to match those worn by a masked suspect who was recorded on a porch camera. Genealogy sites Ancestry, 23andMe, and MyHeritage say they can be asked to comply with court orders seeking information. Another site, GED Match, said its policy is to ask users if they want to opt in to allow police to look at their data. The Associated Press emailed the companies, asking if they have a role in the Guthrie investigation. GED Match has been credited with helping solve the case of the so-called Golden State Killer. Police used DNA from crime scenes to find a distant relative and build a family tree that led to Joseph DeAngelo Jr. in 2020. He pleaded guilty to 13 killings and dozens of rapes in California in the 1970s and 80s. He is serving life in prison without possibility of a parole. Barbara Ray Ventner, an expert genealogist who worked on the DeAngelo case, said patience often is needed in high-tech sleuthing. "I've solved cases in less than 8 hours where people shared a lot of DNA with the suspect. Other cases, you're still working on them 2 years later. This could take a while," Ray Ventner said to CNN, referring to the Guthrie report. In Idaho, DNA from a knife sheath helped point to Brian Kohlberger in the killings of 4 University of Idaho students in 2022. Investigators used genealogy sites to build a family tree and build trash from the Pennsylvania home of Kohlberger's parents to make a connection. Kohlberger pleaded guilty and was sentenced to life in prison. Ballard said the source and quality of the DNA evidence held by police can be factors when trying to find matches on genealogy sites. "It does require a much better sample than CODIS or CODIS searching does," she said, "and there can be other hurdles." "There are a lot of unknowns when you go into these databases," Ballard said. "The databases are not equal in terms of ethnic distribution. It's comparatively easier to find a Caucasian because more have uploaded their data and there are more family trees to mine." The next article is titled, "Senate GOP Advances Measure to Tighten Mail Voting. Speed Results," by Howard Fisher Capital Media Services. Phoenix. It's billed as a measure to speed up election results. But Senate Republicans on Tuesday adopted a far-reaching measure that, if approved by voters, would allow them to require people who choose to vote by mail, the vast majority of Arizonans, to provide some sort of proof of identity if they want their ballots counted. What that would be, however, is not spelled out in SCR 1001, and Senator Shauna Bullock, the Phoenix Republican who is sponsoring the proposal, refused to answer questions about it from the Democratic lawmakers. That's just part of it. As written and given final Senate approval on a 17-13 party line vote, the measure also puts language in the Arizona Constitution, allowing lawmakers at some future date to eliminate mail-in voting entirely. What it definitely would do is permanently eliminate the option that people now have to simply walk into a polling place on election day, drop off their early ballot, and leave. Instead, the last day for such an action would be the Friday before the election. But those who wait until the last minute still could bring their early ballots to a voting center. What they would have to do, which is not required now, is first present identification, which could require waiting in line. One reason people decide not to vote in person in the first place. Potentially more significant SCR 1001 would override current law that says people who ask for ballots to be mailed to them continue to get them every election cycle as long as they use them. Instead, it would require that there be a request for an early ballot prior to each election. A prime driver behind all this is the question of how quickly Arizonans want to know who won an election and what they're willing to give up for faster results. It starts with the fact that more than 80% of Arizonans prefer to vote by mail versus showing up at a polling place. What's crucial is that under current law, there is no requirement for voters to provide identification. Instead, early ballots are reviewed to see if the signatures on the envelope match what county election officials have on record. If they do, the envelope is opened and the ballots are counted. What has backed up the system is that in the 2004 general election, about 265,000 early ballots were dropped off on election day, including more than 210,000 in Maricopa County. But election workers can't even begin to verify them until after they've finished with the ballots cast that day. In 2022, it took days to confirm that Democrat Katie Hobbs had won the gubernatorial election over Republican Kerry Lake, and all that led to more than a year of litigation amid claims of fraud and mismanagement. There were similar issues in the 2020 and 2024 presidential races. If nothing else, Senator J.D. Mesnard said the slow results have made us laughingstock of the country. SCR 1001, said the Chandler Republican, avoids the need to verify signatures on those late early ballots, allowing them to be tabulated immediately. Senate Minority Leader Priya Sundarrajan said there is no need to sacrifice voter convenience for speed, and the Tucson Democrat said there are other ways to speed up the process short of what's in your measure. But Mesnard said there's an important purpose behind all this. When you have on election day the appearance of an outcome that one person won and the other person lost, only to have it reversed days later, and I've seen this happen where the Republican was on top at first and the Democrat came back and won, and I've seen it in reverse, he said. But the more you have that happen, the more people start to question it. Mesnard said it's just human nature. They're not part of the counting process, he said, and if their guy didn't win, they're going to wonder, what's up? The central theme in all of this is early voting. Prior to 1991, the only people entitled to get an early ballot had to prove a special need, whether a physical infirmity or that they would be out of their voting precinct on election day. That year, the Republican-controlled legislature approved no excuse early voting, and not only has it grown proven popular in statewide races, but some jurisdictions, like Tempe, have all voting done by mail. Democratic Senator Lauren Kuby said that actually has increased voter turnout in her community. What may have changed since then, Democrats have suggested, is that their party has gotten better about getting out those early votes. Kuby said this measure is the result of a tiny and very loud minority of anti-American conspiracy theorists who can't stand the possibility that other people might vote. And Senator Annalise Ortiz, Democrat of Phoenix, called the measure the last gasp of a party that is deeply unpopular with the American people and is terrified of the people expressing themselves at the ballot box. Senator Mark Finchem countered that SCR 1001 is perhaps the most democratic thing we can do, given that it will be the voters in November who would get the last word about whether to ratify the constitutional proposal. It's as though some members of this body don't think the people are smart enough to vote, said the Prescott Republican. The twisted logic there just does not compute. But Sundarrajan said that the provisions that the Democrats believe will impair voting access are being mixed in with some things that are popular, such as a requirement to present ID when voting in person, and a ban on foreign contributions. And both of those, she said, already are illegal in Arizona, with or without SCR 1001. She also said some other provisions may not be as obvious, like repealing the ability of people who now vote early to count on automatically getting a ballot before every election. Instead, there would have to be an affirmative request confirming a specific mail address prior to each biennial general election. Senator Mitz Epstein, Democrat of Tempe, said that's going to come as a surprise to people who have voted early and gotten a ballot by mail for years. There's also the fact that Bullock's last-minute changes dressed up the name that the measure will get when it goes on the ballot. Originally dubbed the Arizona Secure Elections Act, it will now be known as the Safer Elections, Faster Results Act. There may be reasons that some people are afraid of the open-ended language that empowers the legislature, currently controlled by Republicans, to eliminate early voting entirely. The Arizona Republican Party filed suit 3 years ago, asking that early voting be declared illegal, arguing that the only form of voting specifically authorized by the framers of the Arizona Constitution is in person and on Election Day. That argument was rejected by the State Court of Appeals. Voters actually may have a different choice in November. An initiative drive launched earlier this month seeks to go in the opposite direction, enacting a constitutional provision preserving the right to vote early as well as to drop off an early ballot on Election Day. Backers, the funders that have yet to be identified, have until July 2nd to gather the 383,923 valid signatures to put that plan to voters. We end with the weather. The weather for the next few days includes, on Friday the 20th, a high of 67 degrees, a low of 45 degrees, it'll be partly cloudy, and there will be a 0% chance of rain. On Saturday the 21st, a high of 73, a low of 53, it'll be mostly sunny, with a 0% chance of rain. On Sunday the 22nd, a high of 81 degrees, low of 58, it'll be partly cloudy, with a 0% chance of rain. We are at the conclusion of today's Yuma Sun Daily program. This is your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster, Neil Kelly. Thank you for tuning in today for the Yuma Sun Daily. If you missed any part of this program, you can go to our website, sunsounds.org, and listen to it on demand under broadcast info and audio. The Wall Street Journal is next on Sun Sounds of Arizona.